Get up and dance the American Eagle. Two or three small eggs are laid in a nest, which an eagle made. Eagle eggs in our American nation spend 35 days in incubation. The eagle parents take turnabout, keeping eggs warm until the chicks hatch out. Now the kids are small for the first several weeks, and the parents pop food into their beaks. And if an eagle would make a wish for a treat to eat, it would want a fish. When a fish is caught, it's an eagle convention. The parents divide it and the kids pay attention. But later on, when a fish is caught, the kids divide it up like they were taught. Sticks and branches are eagle toys. Holding on is taught there, girls and boys. They pluck baby feathers as new ones show up. They keep on a plucking as they grow up. Ma and Pa teach many things, like jumping up and down and flapping their wings. Eagle kids flap and jump and cry, and after weeks of practice there, ready to fly. But if they won't fly out of that nest, Papa keeps their food until they pass the test. At the age of one, the kids leave home to make their way in the world alone. And after a 4 or 5 year wait, they settle down with a lifetime mate. Together they sleep and hunt and eat, and fly as high as 10,000 feet. On a clear and cloudless summer day, they can spot a fish 3 miles away. When they build nests, they build heavy ones, some as heavy as 1 or 2 tons. Let's hope the eagle is here to stay as the emblem of the U.S. of A.
You're listening to Waveforms WGXC. This program is Frequency, Meet Bird People in Hudson Valley, and my name is Mayuko. Frequency invites the local community to be inspired by the joy, beauty, and wisdom bird enthusiasts find in the nature of our neighborhoods. Every episode features an interview with local bird people, plus a freeform mix of sound made by birds and humans inspired by birds. We started today's show with a song titled The American Eagle by Bruce Hark, which I believe he's not American. I thought he was Canadian. And I believe when he says the American Eagle, it probably means the bald eagle. Anyhow, the track was from his 1973 released album, Captain Entropy. And as you heard, it was a song about eagles' chicks growing up. And I'm not entirely sure if it's accurate, ornithologically speaking, but it kind of fits the mood of the story that we're going to hear today from today's guest, Justin Schmidt. Justin is a wildlife photographer and a Red Hook resident, and he has been documenting a family of peregrine falcon nesting on the local bridge in Dutchess County, and he has put numerous photographs of them that he took last year into this one beautiful book titled Trestle Peregrines. And so it's not eagle chicks, but, you know, raptor children, anyhow. And in this interview, he shares the challenges that falcon chicks faced, Justin's experience of working with local rehabbers, and the joy of taking time to slow down and observe all the creatures around us while respecting boundaries. So without further ado, let's listen to my interview with Justin. Thank you for tuning in. This is Frequency on Waveforms WGXC 90.7 FM. Well, thank you for taking time to speak with me today.
Yeah, no problem.
Can you briefly introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. My name is Justin Schmidt, and I am a wildlife photographer, not by profession, but just interest.
Well, professional level of the work that
I'm looking at
is pretty incredible. And you're originally from New Jersey.
Yep.
But now you're a local.
Yes.
In Dutchess County.
Correct. I lived in Rhinebeck, and now I'm currently in Red Hook, New York.
So how did your interest in wildlife begin?
That's a good question. Being young, growing up as a kid, I used to spend a lot of time outdoors on camping trips and whatnot, and I was just always fascinated with the outdoor world and all the creatures that were surrounding me, whether it be frogs, or I used to fish a lot, so I used to see a lot of stuff fishing. Eventually, I just got into all sorts of wildlife, but birds in general are, you know, the most abundant around here, so it's just easier to focus my time on birds, but I photograph all types of wildlife currently.
Including foxes.
Foxes, bobcats, coyotes. I like all the things that you don't get to see often because either people are asleep or they just come out and they're more active at night. But if you wake up early enough or you go out right around dusk, you might get lucky and see them occasionally. And those are my favorite times to photograph, so I don't sleep much.
I was wondering.
I'm out very early and I stay out very late.
Yeah, because when I see your, well, first I saw your work on Instagram and I was thinking, okay, so all these things that you're photographing, they're all around me. They live in my neighborhood, and I don't get to see them because I'm terrible at waking up early. Even though being a birder, that's truly a challenge for me. But it is kind of amazing to realize that they're here.
Yeah,
I'm just not trained or prepared or working hard enough to see them. But if you are willing, you have all these amazing diversity around you.
If you do your research, you know, like just through observation, and then if I see something that interests me, I'll always research and find out more about it. So through sight and observation and then a little bit of research, you can pick up on their habits or when the best time it is you'll see them. Or like currently right now is fox kit season. So if you're lucky enough to find a den, and you're respectful enough and keep your distance, and the parents realize you're not a threat. Of course, they're going to be a little wary and they're going to keep their eye on you the whole time. But like I said, if you keep your distance and you're respectful and quiet and don't get in their way, they usually will accept you for the most part, and you can watch them raise their kids to adulthood, which is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's also for this project, I guess I can call it, the one Peregrine Falcon's family that you followed through just last year, or when did it
Yeah,
exactly
just last year I was...
So you came upon them last year.
Yeah, well, actually a friend is the one who mentioned them to me, and I just decided one day when things were slow elsewhere, I was photographing and there wasn't much happening, so I figured I'd go check out the location that he had mentioned them. And as soon as I got there, one was flying around, and I said, oh, wow, this is gonna be fun. Falcons are one of my favorite birds. So again, same thing with the being respectful and keeping your distance. I used those same principles with these guys and realized that they were going to be nesting here, and that it's a residential pair that's been there for a few years. And yeah, I got to watch them raise a family of four little chicks, and got to see them grow up, and just an amazing thing just to watch how caring the parents are. And I know falcons are known, I mean, any wildlife is known to look like killers when they're bringing in food and whatnot, but to see the other side of them is really amazing, how caring they are to their young. Really cool.
You must have started shooting in like February. When did they start building nests?
This year I started a little earlier because I knew that they were going to be there, but last year, I would say was probably the first or second week in April.
Okay.
And then from April till August, when the last one fledged, was the time period I spent with them. So for about 5 months, close to 6 months, I was photographing them on my days off of work. Not every day, but on my days off of work.
So there are many challenges that you documented in this book also, but for birds to raise their chicks, you know, they keep losing their chicks for all sorts of threats from outside, like predators, and you mentioned the traffic accident because they live on the bridge and there's some traffic. And so could you tell us how it went for this falcon family you followed? And
Well, first off, there was four of them, so I got to see four chicks in there. But from my 6 months of almost 6 months of observing, I only witnessed one fully fledge from the area and go off with its parents. So that means three of them, there was problems. I'll start with the one that I don't know what happened to it. It just mysteriously disappeared. We don't know if it was hit by the passing train. We don't know if a predator got it. Kind of just disappeared mysteriously. The other two, one of them upon fledging, and if no one knows what fledging means, when they leave the nest site and take flight for the first time. So when that happened, one of them ended up crash landing down into a pretty busy road that the bridge overpasses. And luckily, there was people working outside that day and saw this happen. And right before we got there, they had told us they rescued the bird, got hold of a rehabber, and their buddy that works for them was going to drive it up to the rehabber. I kept in contact with that rehabber as much as possible to find out if the bird was successfully released, but they stopped contacting me, so I do not know if it ever was released or not. And then the last bird was the one that I rescued. I watched it that day jump from the bridge, or jump from its nesting site, took flight, and then out of nowhere, about 45 minutes later, I would say, I watched it from the bridge crash land into the creek below the bridge. This was basically the worst thing possible that could have happened, and of course it happened the day that I was there. Luckily it did happen while the day that I was there, because if no one else was around, the bird probably wouldn't have been rescued. So I actually started taking my socks and my pants off, and I was actually going to jump in the creek and swim out there, but then I realized where I'm photographing is a boating and a kayaking rental center. So I asked the owner if I could just quickly borrow a kayak and kayak out, and I explained to him the situation of what had just happened and that I didn't have much time. So he was more than generous enough, let me pulled out the kayak for me and let me get in the kayak, and I just made my way out to the bird, and with the paddle, the oars, I gently kind of just put the oar underneath the falcon and scooped it up out of the water and placed it into the kayak, and was able to safely grab its talons so that it wouldn't go crazy flying all over the place or trying to fly. And I was able to successfully get it back to land and get it to a local rehabilitator that I knew in the area. That one, unfortunately, had a broken femur upon inspection. I had a broken femur bone. She sent me the x-ray where she brings her birds. Her local vet gave her the x-ray and showed where the break was. And it was scheduled for surgery, and it successfully got through the surgery to fix the femur bone. But then shortly afterwards, it passed away. So unfortunately, that one was never released. So again, one of them mysteriously disappeared. Two of them ended up at rehabilitators, one of which I don't know was ever released, and one of them was successfully raised by the parents till it was out on its own.
You're listening to Bequency on Waveforms WGXE 90.7 FM. If you're just joining us, my guest today is Justin Schmidt, a wildlife photographer and Red Hook resident. We are listening to stories of a family of peregrine falcon nesting on the local bridge in Dutchess County that Justin has been documenting.
You casually mentioned that you went on canoe, and just in this photo, you have the bird in your hand. And the bird looks calm, too.
Well,
how do you know how to handle, like, raptor? I don't think I could do this, like, just pick it up.
Well, it's always a little risky, especially when you don't have gloves.
Yeah,
because
have
they have
gloves.
Razor-sharp talons.
Yeah.
But just through sight and observation at some events where the rehabilitator that I brought my bird to does local events for children, you know, to raise awareness for different species of birds and everything,
mm-hmm.
for her non-releasable birds, and just through observation on how she picks them up and handles them, I kind of had a basic idea of where to grab them so that they wouldn't be able to use their feet and their talons to cause damage to me.
That's a great information, because I wouldn't know. You look as if you've been trained to do this. I mean, in this photo, I don't know, maybe outside this photo there might have been a lot of panic going on, but as far as I can tell from the photos, looks as if you've been trained to handle birds. So people can participate in such events. They can get some ideas of when they encounter a situation like this,
Yeah, I mean, it's always recommended, if possible, to call your local rehabber first and just have them come out and successfully deal with it on their own because they're trained. But in this instance, this bird was kind of in the middle of a creek and it was doing its best to stay afloat by flapping its wings, and it made its way out to a one of the structural pillars that the bridge, you know, relies on. But from there, it was having trouble grasping onto anything or even climbing up out of the water. So again, it was more of a time situation, and I kind of just used my best judgment and got out there as quickly as possible to get the bird safely back to land, and helped out by a professional who deals with these instances.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I'm glad you happen to have this kayak rental company right near.
Yeah, that was truly, truly a blessing that they were open and running that day, and that he was willing to just let me hop into a kayak and go out and grab the bird.
They even give you the matching color kayak. You're dressed in blue shirt and jeans, and they give you the blue kayak. It's very, you know, aesthetically speaking, this is a great page also. Oh, do you mind telling me the name of the rehabbers that you work with?
Oh, yeah. Her name is Annie Mardini, and she her company is called Wild Mountain Birds, and she's located in Rosendale, New York.
Okay. So people can find their information on the... Yeah, they have a website or something?
Yeah, she has a Facebook page, and yeah, she's always doing good things for these birds, and it's... all money out of her pocket, so she's always open for any kind of monetary donations to help her out, because she's, although she's retired now, she has the time to do it. She's still, New York does not fund any rehabilitation, so if anyone who's a rehabber in New York State, it's all money out of their pockets, so any bit of help is always helpful for these guys, because they're doing great things to get these birds back out into the wild.
What was the most joyful part of this whole process?
Most joyful part? Well, like I said, they are one of my favorite birds of prey. I mean, it's the fastest animal on the planet, and for me to be able to witness one and see a family in action right here where I live is awesome. But more so, it's always a learning experience. Just through observation and photographing them, just to again to see how caring they are towards their kids, and how protective they are of their space. Anything that was passing through, they would let them know that this is their area, and they would run them right out of the area. One day I was in the wrong area for photographing it, but there was an eagle flying up the creek, and don't matter the size of the bird, they'll go after it. They're very determined, and they're very not scared of anything three times their size. And she chased that eagle and pushed it right into a tree, forced it to take to perch in a tree across the creek, and it's just mind-blowing to see their power and their agility and their speed. Just a really fun bird to observe. And also amazing that they just adapt to almost any kind of environment. They're found all over the world, but more recently they're adapting very well to cityscapes. New York City's loaded with peregrines. All the major bridges from Albany down to New York City usually have nesting pairs on them now. So it's just amazing that they adapt. And
there was a news about the family and Rip Van Winkle Bridge.
Yeah.
Last year.
Yeah, the Kingston Rhinecliff Bridge as well also has a nesting pair on their bridge. The Mid-Hudson Bridge in Poughkeepsie has a pair. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I actually met the guy who checks all the nests on the bridge earlier this year in New Paltz. He was doing a release of two juveniles mm-hmm. that were brought to rehabbers, and he released them over in New Paltz, and he got to talking about how he goes up on all the major bridges and does nest checks and does the banding of them and all that. And mm-hmm. that was really interesting to find out his work, something I would love to do. Obviously, I'm not trained to be climbing on top of bridges that are super high up like that, but it was just really cool to learn a little bit about how he does it. And
yeah, who is this man?
I don't have the name offhand. He gave me his card. He works for New York State, D.C.
Okay.
And I forget the name offhand, but he does some pretty amazing work and actually has some YouTube videos on the internet too of him banding the birds and him on top of the bridge going out to the nests, uh-huh. which is really cool. He was saying he's dive bombed a lot by the parents. The parents aren't happy when he's up there, but he has to band them, so because mm-hmm. they're a threatened species here in New York State. So a lot of the young are banded, and he says he's been hit a few times on his helmet by the adults.
Not only have to climb up all the way, but with the helmet on seems a little tricky.
Yeah,
oh, that's crazy. And so these falcons, they're back in the same nesting spot this year.
Yes.
And you're following.
I've stopped in a couple of times, yes. Not much recently because she's on, from what I'm assuming, she's on eggs right now. So it's pretty slow right now. The parent just, the adult male does all the hunting while she's on eggs. And the male will come in from time to time just to give her a break and stretch her wings and fly out of the nesting hole. But other than that, not much happens until the kids are born. That's when things get interesting because they have, like I said, they're very territorial. And once they have young to protect, anything that passes through, they'll kind of run them out of the area. But also, they'll just be more, a little bit more action when the kids are born because there'll be more food deliveries and it'll just be a little more busy and not so much sitting around. So kind of just waiting until the eggs hatch. Mm-hmm. Which should be probably, I would say, the end, probably the middle of May. Close the middle of May, maybe close a little bit closer to the end of May. And then we just get to watch the kids grow, and they grow quick. So
I was going to ask if people can buy your books, but since you mentioned it's really not the goal of this project, maybe, I guess they can follow you on Instagram.
Yeah, my Instagram is jazzphots, JASPHOTS. And I'm always posting wildlife up on there. If you are interested and you do follow my Instagram, you can message me about purchasing a copy of the book there. I don't really advertise them to be on sale. It's more of a personal project for me, and it was a little bit costly to get it printed because it is quite a few bit of pages. It was 6 months worth of photography with them, so it's a full-blown book. It's, you know, over 100 pages, which wasn't necessarily cheap to print, which is why I can't really be selling them for too cheap. But if you are interested in one, reach out to me and I can give you the details on how much they are and who it gets printed by and whatnot. They did a really good job, so I'm very pleased with how it came out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I think that's all the questions.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. Greatly appreciate it, and happy Earth Day to everyone. Today's Earth Day, so if you get a chance, get out there and enjoy some of the wildlife out there today. And as always, respect it and just respect our planet in general because it's here for both us and the wildlife. So happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day. I thought it was yesterday.
Okay.
Wasn't it? Well, thank you.
All right.
Peregrine Falcon. Beep, beep, beep.
That recordings of peregrine falcon were from Stokes Field Guide to Bird Songs. You know, since I interviewed Julie Hart last month about New York Breeding Bird Atlas and the joy of taking time to really get to know birds around us instead of, you know, just checking boxes and growing numbers of your sightings lists and accomplishing goals and all that kind of way. Instead, I really wanted to keep going with the theme of slowing down and truly appreciate the amazing diversity around us and hear stories from people who practice such observations. So huge thanks to Justin Schmidt, my guest for today's show, and I highly recommend checking out Justin's photos on his Instagram account if you're on the platform. Again, it's at JASPHOTS. And you can listen to my past interviews on this show, Bequency, at bequency.tumblr.com, or you can just search for Bequency WGXC and a bunch of things come up. Now it's time for us to listen to some bird-inspired music. And, you know, I feel like somehow it's almost cliche to have, like, acoustic, like, folky music for anything to do with nature when, like, people make videos and stuff. And, I mean, please don't get me wrong. I like those stuff myself, and I play a lot of them on this very show, too. But I just feel it doesn't always have to be that way. There's just so many artists in many different genres who were inspired by birds. So I wanted to play some electronic music type of thing that's inspired by birds today. And we'll start with a track that's a pretty famous one. It's called Pacific State by 808 State, released in 1989. It's a famous one for the use of sampling a recording of a loon. So stay tuned for 808 State. Thanks for listening. This is Frequency on WGXC. We just heard a track titled Learning the Birds by artist name is Changes to Blind, who was originally from Syracuse, New York, now based in North Carolina. And the track was from an album titled Volume 8, Before Birth to Expiration, which just came out this year, a couple of months ago. And preceding that was Pacific State by British electronic music group 808 State. And before moving on to more music, I'd like to introduce some of the upcoming bird walks happening around here in the Hudson Valley. In Columbia County, which is my home turf, Alan DeVoe Bird Club is my gang, and we have bird walks, one happening on May 18th, which is Saturday, at Olana in Hudson, and May 25th, also Saturday, at Drowned Land Swamp in Ancrumdale. You can find the meetup time and exact location at our website, www.alandevobirdclub.org. You can also, I think, search Alan DeVoe Bird Club. And Columbia Land Conservancy is also hosting a bird walk. This one is also at Drowned Land Swamp, but this is happening on May 10th, which is Friday, Spring Migration Bird Walk. You can find more information at columbialand.org. Ulster County, they have bird walks hosted by John Burroughs Natural History Society Monday, May 6th at High Banks, which is a scenic Hudson property apparently in the town of Esopus. Wednesday, May 8th around New Paltz, and Thursday, May 9th at John Burroughs Nature Sanctuary in Highland. You can find the meetup time and exact location at their website, jbnhs.org. jbnhs.org. Dutchess County, there are tons of field trips hosted by Ralph T. Waterman Bird Club. Wednesday, May 1st in Beacon. Saturday, May 4th in Bashak Hill. Wednesday, May 8th in Ferncliff Forest. Wednesday, May 15th, Peach Hill in town, Poughkeepsie Park. Sunday, May 19th, Doodle Town. Wednesday, May 22nd, Nuclear Lake. Wednesday, May 29th, Tamarack Preserve. You can find more information at their website at watermanbirdclub.org. Waterman Bird Club, one word. watermanbirdclub.org. For Greene County, I got some information of the bird walks led by Larry Fetterman, whom I interviewed on this radio show Bequency last year. He has a spring birding series at Ramshorn Livingston Audubon Sanctuary in Catskill. I participated this last year and it was amazing. This series of walks already started on Friday, April 19th, and the series will run through each Friday through May 31st. April 28th. Oh, sorry, that's already passed. No, that's actually tomorrow, so I should mention. April 28th, bird walk at the Mawignak Preserve for the Greenland Trust. May 25th, BioBlitz at the Mountaintop Arboretum, Tannersville. That word is really hard for me to pronounce. Anyhow, for more information and or to subscribe to Larry's mailing list, you can contact him at birderlarry@verizon.net. Birderlarry, that's one word, @verizon.net to receive information on his upcoming bird walks and talks. And I've been speaking over this local bird field recording made by Christopher Funkhauser, who is a writer, musician, and host of Poet Radio here on WGXC, which airs for Thursdays of the month at 7 p.m. And so, why not join one of these walks that's probably happening near you? Okay, let's listen to more bird-inspired music of the month. Gonna keep on going with some electronic music type of thing that's bird-inspired. Stay tuned for An Ark of Doves, a track by Harold Budd and Brian Eno. This is Frequency on WGXC. Thanks for listening. Bird House. Sorry to be so loud. Bird House. That was the track title by Hi-Fi Club plus Jad Fair and KPT Michigan. Ahead of that, we heard An Ark of Doves by Harold Budd and Brian Eno. And that's it for my show today. You're listening to Waveforms WGXC 90.7 FM. This program has been B. Quincy, and I have been Mayuko. I'm here every fourth Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, so next show will air on May 25th. I hope you come back and join me again. Coming up next here on WGXC is The Countdown, hosted by Tom Rowe, counting down 10 new sound stories or songs, American Top 40 style. Usually the top 10 is recent songs, but sometimes there are thematic countdowns or local music themed shows, so find it out by staying tuned here on Waveforms WGXC. I hope everybody has a wonderful spring migration season of the birds, which cannot not be wonderful. So happy birding, and see you next time.